hard. I'd kick it in the head when he was 25. Speed drive, don't wanna stay alive when you're 25. And when the city glows from moths and sparks, and Freddy's got spots from ripping up the sock, rock his face, funky little boat race. The television man is crazy, Sam with juvenile delinquent wrecks. Oh man, I need to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey, a Kids, a Comics. We are on issue 108, a point of some contention, but we worked it out. We are coming to you. Last week there were Mother Nature struck, and there were all kinds of things going on, and we got pushed, so we had to release the lost issue again. I want to make sure that it remains unlost, so we pushed that one back out there. But we are on 108 this week.
This is the real 108.
The real 108. It's not one of those. One of those phony doppelganger 108s that we see so often. We are doing an issue on the Teen Titans. It's our Hey Kids Comics team up, the Teen Titans.
This is our fifth team up so far.
It's our fifth?
Fifth team. This is a Hey Kids Comics team up number 5.
Nice. Hey Kids Comics team up number 5, issue 108, season 1. I'm just trying to think of other ways to, but this is about the Teen Titans.
This is the one that changes everything. Which actually does. We're not actually prepared to back that up with anything.
No one who ever says this is the one that changes everything is prepared to back up that statement. Yeah, so we can feel true. Free to throw that around. This is the issue that changes everything. We'll do a audio montage of doors slamming and glasses breaking.
We're changing everything. Everything must go. Okay.
This is an issue that's, I think, pretty near and dear to both Cole and I know it's near and dear to Cole's heart, but it's also near and dear to my heart because of the fact that the Teen Titans, for the most part, the enduring legacy of the Titans is that it was always a labor. Not always is hyperbole, but it was.
But then we started the show with hyperbole, so.
Right. Well, then we said this is the issue that changes everything.
Or as I like to say, hyperbole.
It's hyperbole. Hyperbole.
Hyperbole.
Hyperbole. I'm making a new pasta.
Wasn't he like Vibe from the Justice League? That was his uncle.
That was his uncle.
Hyperbole. What?
I'm making a new pasta. It's going to be called Hyperbole. Hyperbole.
What shape is it?
It's huge.
It's huge shape.
Yeah. It's from my new pasta company, Histrionic. It's the fact that for the most part, the Titans have existed as a labor of love for whatever creator. It's like a weird Twilight Zone episode with a pocket watch that gives you the memories of the people that held it before.
Wow.
Yeah. This episode changes everything.
It truly does now.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't change anything. But it's been a labor of love for whoever ended up with it, sort of. Like, everybody kind of, every editor has had their own editorial mandate. Every writer's had their own vision for it. But because of the characters that have kind of been involved since Jump Street, it's been an art more than it has been a business. Now, yeah, granted, you're selling the Teen Titans, so it's pretty easy to put those toys on the shelves, and they have since Mego. But
that is so true. Yes, even the old original Titans got the toy treatment.
Titans got the toy treatment. It's got alliteration. I like it. So you've had a much more storied history with the Titans than I have. I kind of discovered the Titans later on. I think I started picking up collecteds from Half Price Books when I really got into the Titans and realized what a great story they were telling over just, you know, oh, look, it's the sidekicks.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny you mention it that way, especially is because that's, I think, where that started. I don't know a lot of the specific history of the Teen Titans, But right. I really think it was sort of a, you know, let's do something with the sidekicks. And now sidekicks. And over the years, it really outgrew, in a sense, that sort of, you know, here, this is just the sidekick showcase.
Exactly. And one thing that it it did very well, and I think almost as well as any comic that I've seen, was, and I think one of the reasons it's so special to both of us, is because when we started the show, we had a vision for what we wanted to do. Sometimes our vision's gotten lost, but ultimately the goal is to talk about the overarching themes and the fact that the comic form is the best way, in our opinion, to kind of tell that story. You know, the coming of age tales, the sexuality in comics, the drug use in comics, the thing that we say that sci-fi does better than anyone else, if done correctly, and the Titans really embodies those ideas.
Absolutely. And the thing is that you have this progression over the years, because originally, like I was saying, the Titans were kind of your showcase of, you know, here's Robin, here's Wonder Girl, here's Speedy, Aqualad. You
right.
Know, if you had a sidekick, if Marvel was doing this, it would have been, you know, Toro and Bucky and others.
And others.
Who they didn't have nearly as many sidekicks. They had them, but they didn't do
yeah.
near as many. But, you know, you would have, what you had there was like, let's do something where, like, you know, the kids get out on their own and do their thing, and because they're hip and they're cool, and
because they're hip and they're cool,
and Robin, you know, stands a really good chance of, you know, it. What it did was let Robin be the leader he was born/trained to be.
Right.
You know, from the outset, he was. If anybody had that in them, it was definitely him. But, you know, that only went so far, because for the longest time it was mainly just the kids out trying to, you know, have their own superhero team, and isn't that cute? And, you know, bless their little hearts.
Bless their hearts.
And, you know, it would be many years later when you get a more sophisticated storytelling, you get the genesis of what would come even later. You get that period in history where you've got an editorial mandate, or you've got writers and editors and the company is willing to, let's pick up on some of these old titles nobody has ever, that haven't been relevant.
Right.
Or relative, for that matter, in many years. And so almost simultaneously, and I'm sure there are those who are more steeped in comic history who could call me down on this, but it seems like almost simultaneously, Marvel and DC were taking the tact of let's get our young guns back in action.
Right.
And, you know, the X-Men, who had disappeared, their title had remained in active numbering, despite the fact that, like our last issue, it turned into just reprints.
Right.
And
the X-Men Classics or whatever they
yeah.
call them.
And then all of a sudden, you know, after however many, you know, a couple of dozen issues or whatever, they all of a sudden it's like brand new stories out of the blue. And basically what happened was you're getting the resurgence of these characters. And so with the Teen Titans, what was neat is all of the old school were still there. And
right.
many of them were still active. So you had Wonder Girl, you had Robin. And then to a lesser degree, they could call upon Aqualad and Speedy. And, I mean, Kid Flash, I think, was in the mix from the outset as well.
He was, yeah.
But, you know, and much like the X-Men, where you have, you know, Cyclops and Marvel Girl, who rose again because her name was Phoenix.
Phoenix.
That's there for Steve. You have, you know, some of your old school, and then you have a whole brand new slew of characters, many of which did not exist prior to the first issue or their first appearance of this new incarnation.
Right.
And in this case, of course, You have Changeling, who had previously been Beast Boy as part of the Doom Patrol.
Right. Yes.
Which is the most, one of the most awkwardly named groups that ever existed.
We should do an episode on the Doom Patrol.
We really should, because Niles Calder was a great guy, but he was not good with naming things.
He was no Stan Lee. Yeah. He couldn't, yeah. He was, what's his name's wife? He was,
Oh, yeah, John Byrne's, wife. Wow.
Because Robot Man and, what was some of the
Negative
others?
Negative Man, Elasti Girl.
Right, come on, man. You can do better.
And as soon as, Garfield Logan gets out from under Niles Calder's shadow, it's like, I'm Changeling.
It's a bitch.
There's no way I'm going to be Beast Boy anymore.
You know, I mean, you think the guy
came
would
out
have
with a name. The same guy who named Pastepot Pete? I mean, come on.
And the same thing. Niles probably named him, and once he was out from under Niles, he changed his name to Trapster.
Trapster, that's right.
Like, Pastepot Pete? Really? Now, first of all, nobody's used the word Pastepot by the time I was named for 20 years.
That's right. I had to stop and explain what a Pastepot was.
That's why I kept getting caught. If it wasn't for that, I would have probably been on a never-ending crime spree. My weapon is ingenious and brilliant.
I mean, for a while, I tried sort of a little trick. It would be like I'd glue someone to the floor. Got a minute? I'll explain Pastepot Pete.
By the time I was done, they had activated their Avengers card or whatever's living in their Fantastic Four unstable molecule suit that calls the rest of them and does away with their pee. So,
wow.
Yeah, does both.
I had no idea.
But yeah, it's really interesting that the transition that happened between the original like 60s swinging Teen Titans and then what when they were reintroduced, I think it was in the 80s, I believe.
Yes, it was in the 80s. They resurface as the new Teen Titans.
And the new
same as the old Teen Titans.
Right. The new Teen Titans had the same characters, which is a testament to how often DC at the time revolved their characters. Because Barry Allen was still Kid Flash. Dick Grayson was still Robin. For a brief moment in the new Teen Titans world. Before Nightwing. I believe he was still Robin for a while in the new Teen Titans before.
And I want to save you some trouble, or save some trouble for our listeners. Barry Allen was still Flash while he
was.
What
did I say?
You said Barry Allen was still Kid Flash.
Oh, sorry. Who was Kid Flash then?
Wally West, was it?
But, or was it the other? No, it had to be that way, right? Damn it! Now I don't remember which way it was.
It was the way.
It was the way it was. But it was really interesting how it happened because Marv Wolfman got a hold of it, and at the time he had worked a little bit with our favorite writer or illustrator that I now can't remember his name for the life of me.
It's because of Wally West. Wally West was the first Kid Flash.
Okay. Because he got a hold of a Perez. Thank you. God.
George Perez, yes.
And they immediately not only worked well together, you know, as one a plotter, one an author, but they were essentially co-plotting the book from the onset when they started working together. They had ideas that they wanted to use. They were, for lack of, you know, TED talking it, they were synergizing very well, and they came down with this idea that they were going to make this book what it always should have been, which is these characters standing on their own and not living in the shadow of their quote-unquote mentors.
Exactly. Yeah, so you've got, you know, Robin and Wonder Girl who have already had that dynamic of living in the shadow of a mentor, predecessor, being the sidekick. You've got Changeling, who as Beast Boy was never really strictly a sidekick, but he was sort of, you know, the tag-along young member of a team.
Yeah,
and the one that maybe not everybody really wanted. per se.
Well, and the team that, you know, he was tagging along with was just awkward and weird in its own right, so...
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's sad when you're the outcast of a group of outcasts.
Well, we're, of course, talking about the Doom Patrol. Did anybody ever call the Doom Patrol in, by the way?
I think they just kind of insinuated themselves into situations. They were sort of like the A-team, but they didn't wait for you to hire them.
They just billed you after.
Yeah, that's right. They just showed up. And like the people that go door to door to see if you want your trees trimmed and then charge you three times what you thought you were going to pay.
Right. And, but he was, yeah, like you said, he was called Beast Boy for a great portion of his adolescent life, which can only cause, you know, during those formative years, can only cause great issue with your ego. So exactly. As soon as he broke free of that, decided to put on not a onesie and a twosie and started calling himself Changeling, God bless his heart.
But they, you know, the thing about it is you have these characters who've all had a similar dynamic.
Right.
And then they're brought together with characters who did not have that dynamic. You have Starfire, who was a, you know, royalty back on my planet. I'm royalty.
Back on my planet.
Should have stayed there. You know, you've got Raven, who, she got her own set of problems.
Yeah, and Raven, to run the risk, you know, because they all, and I want you to finish your thought, but I want to remember this. They all bring that. They did a brilliant job, and you and I were talking about it before, of conceptualizing. Obviously, Wolfman and Perez had kids, or had some direct access to teenagers, because they brought those teenage issues into the book in such a way as to not make them intrusive, but to use them as a storytelling tool. And And to, you know, because comic books are best, because they are episodic, they're best when they are driven by character before all plot. And, you know, they brought to the table these issues and problems in a believable way, as believable as you can be when you have mystic powers and you're tied to the demon Trigon.
Or you're from another planet, or your sister's trying to kill you and your parents. And
So I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm Raven. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's... You're Raven about Raven?
I'm Raven about Raven. That's so Raven.
That's right.
It had to happen. This is the episode that changes everything.
Exactly. So, yeah, you've got those characters, and then you've got Cyborg, who, you know, you've got these characters that come out of the blue, and through a clever combination of exposition and later on just, you know, taking the characters outside of the story and doing a four-part miniseries that gives you the backstory.
Right.
Of your characters you're not overly familiar with. They did a great job of basically presupposing you know what superhero books are supposed to be like.
Yes, exactly. They didn't give you this huge, you know, 12-issue origin story.
Exactly.
They're like, this is Robin, this is Kid Flash, this is Wonder Girl. Okay, here's some new characters that are kids. Go do your thing. And the thing was, they didn't just say, go do your thing, fight Dr. Light. You know, like as we've so often discussed in when we talk about Identity Crisis, like the original Teen Titans books did. You know, go. Mm-hmm. We're gonna prop you up to lift up the ego and let you and let our sidekicks practice on you. You know, and do so by lobotomizing you and making you, you know, and then you're gonna come back super crazy and commit heinous acts. No, they were like, you know what? Yeah, Deathstroke. Yeah, why not? Let's throw Deathstroke at him. Like, what? What?
If I'm not mistaken, and I could well be, that Deathstroke has his origins in the pages of the Titans.
He does. He indeed does.
So, yes. You've got these, a lot of these characters where, yeah, they didn't pull any punches. Out of the gate, they have them fighting everything from, you know, super-powered assassins to... superpowered criminals to just like
demons,
crazy demons and gods and things like that. And then, you know, no sooner does one thing settle down than the next thing, you know, they've got to go into outer space.
Right.
They'll beat up on alien races, and they literally never get cut a break.
Well, and they, not only that, but the way it was presented, right? You didn't have, this book was presented like a really good TV show that they could, with no budget. And in the sense that the twists and turns that they threw at you were something that were more adult than what was being run in most adult, quote-unquote, adult comic books. And I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here, but what was the Judas contract?
Yes.
And the stuff with Jericho and the stuff with the Ravager, like that was some serious tough stuff. Like,
but also in the, before the age of story arcs,
yes,
where everybody was there was this editorial mandate to write toward story arcs that could be repackaged as trade paperbacks. They were arcing like crazy over at Teen Titans, but they weren't beholden to a specific number of issues. You know, they weren't forced into having a 6-issue arc.
Right.
They just told epic stories. I mean, very often you'd have an epic story, maybe one issue, and then you'd have another epic story.
Well, it's one of those things where when you're allowed to do it, you know, when you're allowed to, when you sit down with your friends and you come up with this giant story, the story that spans, it's like a really good D&D campaign, and there's no restriction on what you can do. So when you have two friends sit down to make a comic and they want this story to run 11 issues and nobody's there to say no, and they can do it and people will buy it because it's that good, why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly, and I think that's why it was that good, because it wasn't mired in editorial mandates. It wasn't, I mean, there were some editorial mandates there in some ways. There had to be. But for the most part, you get the feel that these stories are from an age where the editors weren't trying to second-guess everything.
Exactly, exactly. And they trusted the creators. They said, this is yours. Go do it. This has become an art form. We want you to do it. There was an instance, I was reading during my research for this, I stumbled upon Marv Wolfman's blog, long since abandoned, like an old car in the woods, but the glove compartment was full of awesome documents, you know, like old
things
letters.
You've never seen before.
Exactly, and one of the things he said in there was when he was making something we'll touch on later, which is the game, which was the graphic novel that they were trying to write that was like 25 years in the making that finally got done in like 2011. He kept trying to make this thing, and he kept coming back to it. He had writer's block, and Wolfman came back to it, and then Perez wanted to do it, but they were involved in other things, and at one point Wolfman approached whoever was editing DC at the time and said, you know, we want to go because we have half of it done. We want to do it. I don't care if you bring in every person who's ever drawn and written Titans to finish it. We want it to be finished. And DC actually said, which is a feather in their cap, you know what? No, we don't want to put this out so people will buy it. This is your baby. You created this whole thing. I mean, how many characters have now come from the Titans world?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, because what they did was more so than the original Teen Titans. They created this legacy, because what came before was like, let's put all these different sidekick characters together. The characters all existed. They all had different creators. But this is the first time where you took something like that and then you added a bunch of new characters. And then over time, as their roster changed, it borrowed heavily from the existing universe, but while also simultaneously, you know, creating new characters along the lines, and you got that sort of ebb and flow where characters would leave, they'd come back. It's just fascinating how the series has evolved and continued to evolve over the years.
But and not only that, but how many of the characters that have come out of, you know, the Teen Titans have they then gone on to graduate to the big leagues, let's call them, quote unquote.
No, that's so true, yeah.
And become, you know, JLAers or outsiders or, you know, comic book, you know, characters in their own right that have taken the mantle of whatever their mentor was from before. Guys like Grayson and your Flashes and Cyborg's now a big player in the DC universe, and he got his start.
He got kicked up to the big leagues with the Justice League.
Right.
Where, you know, back when he was getting his start, he actually fought the Justice League along with the Titans.
Exactly, because, you know, they were the grown-ups. And that was another thing that they did, was they wanted the Titans to be pure. They didn't come from a place with any preconceived existing, you know, notions of what a superhero was. And they told that story so perfectly, how they had to deal with not only, and we were talking about this before, how they not only had to deal with Deathstroke, but, you know, they had to deal with growing up in a world where Deathstroke exists.
Exactly.
And that's awesome. Like, you know, the dichotomy of Batman being on one side and having things like OMAC and a list of how to destroy every superhero if they got uppity, and then Nightwing, who's really kind of the purest form of Batman. You know, he's really the honesty and the integrity and all of that without the overarching paranoia and psychosis. It's really cool to see that. It was an honest, innocent book that included a lot of adult themes told in a way that were, like, you know, it was almost like a Ronald Dahl book of some sort at that point. You know, Roland Dahl book. I said
Roald Dahl.
Ronald Dahl is a great writer. he's a great technical writer. This episode changes everything. So I'm sorry. I've been on my soapbox for a second. I got Hey Kids Comics-y on my soapbox. Sorry about that. So where else do you want to take this? What are some of your memories of this?
Well, one of the things that, you know, we were talking about the kind of maturing of these characters is you get Robin and Wonder Girl and to a much lesser degree Changeling, who have kind of grown up,
right,
and already, and then continue to grow up.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the course, and what was one of the really remarkable things that the Wolfman Perez years did is it allowed Robin to finally come out from, and pun intended, the shadow of the
past. Nice. It absolutely did. You know, Batman has never been a natural, you know, Batman had never been a leader per se. You know, he was always kept to himself. He was somewhere in the he was in the shadows, for lack of a better term. He never really signed on to the Justice League. He was always kind of there as a checks and measures.
He would kind of, like, you know, he'd come up with the teleport and kind of hang out in the back in the corner.
Never took monitor duty. He's an ass. But Robin always had that natural leader in him. Dick Grayson did, and they really got to explore that, and that was really cool to see.
But yeah, what you got there was that kind of ever evolving characterization. The characters that already existed began to evolve. There was one of my absolute favorite stories. I mean, that whole series, that whole run was just chock full of, and at the risk of this being like Teen Titans, the Perez years solely, but they were instrumental in giving us everything that followed.
Right.
Because they were so good. But there was a storyline that literally got unmade by the crisis. And they would later go on, and many years later, and retool the story and tell it again. And that was a beautiful story called Who is Donna Troy?
Yes. Yes.
And it was, what was so neat is these characters were growing. They were maturing. Don Troy meets a normal person. She follows literally almost in her mentor's footsteps, and she marries a regular guy.
Which is your favorite. That's one of your favorite your conventions in comics, is the regular guy.
Yeah, you know, you get the superpowered people, and they know better than to team up because they've seen what happens with celebrities. And if you look at celebrity couples who marry normal people,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times those marriages last longer than 20 minutes or whatever the celebrity record is.
Right.
But the thing is, you had this story inserted into the building toward the big, it was either an annual or a big special issue when Don and Troy got married, and God bless them for nobody attacked the wedding.
Just have a wedding.
And that's another one I want to talk to address insofar as the maturing of these characters. Because what they go through, what Wolfman and Perez did was put these characters through their paces again and again, and I think that's why the characters that already existed mature so well. Because for the first time, they're on their own, even though they're a team. But going back to where I was headed with this, who is Donna Troy was always a mystery, because she was an orphan who Wonder Woman found.
Right.
And it was just, that was it. Wonder Woman finds an orphan, and like any good superhero, kidnaps an American child, takes her to a foreign country, raises her in the culture and beliefs, and turns them into a superhero. So because we have a new superhero, we forgive all the rest of the criminal activity.
Right.
Suddenly you're like, I never thought of Wonder Girl that way. She was the victim.
They all did it. Every one of them did it.
Everyone kidnapped children.
Everyone,
and it was okay.
They either kidnapped children or took their own children and put them directly in harm's way in the most disastrous ways possible. And it's fine.
We have an upcoming issue on just that topic.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
There was always the mystery is, you know, was her name Donna? Was her last name Troy? Who were her parents?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Go fight crime, Teen Titans, until Wolfman and Perez come along and they say, hey, you know, let's throw this character a bone. And Dick Grayson takes it upon himself to discover who she was.
Because he's an awesome detective.
Yeah, and it was, that's what made it an amazing story, is they spent a whole issue where for the most part, the Teen Titans, and this is another thing they did beautifully more than once, they did an issue called A Day in the Life.
Yes.
And it was just like little slice of life dramas. And it sold, because people don't have to see Image guys, the superheroes just beating the crap out of supervillains all the time. If you tell a compelling story, you can make an aside and tell stories about the characters. And then occasionally they go beat up villains.
Right.
And then in this particular case, he does actually work out her history.
Okay.
And it tells a really just compelling, beautiful story. And he, because also Dick is trying to start up his own private detective agency.
Well, why not?
Yeah. Because, I mean, he only trained under the best.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you can, like, you know, necessarily put that on your resume.
What do your credentials look like when you're Dick Grayson trying to start a detective agency?
It's like, you know, I used to work with Batman. What, you like, you know, the Gotham PD? No, I was...
No, never mind.
I was working with him. Oh, yeah, you probably had a collage in your basement.
Right, you're...
String running from one article about Batman to the other. I think I'll go hire Brinks. Whatever the other one is. It was a really neat story, and he presented his findings. He did the work. What was really made it even more special is, as a character, he tells Donna, you know, she wants to hire him to find out who she was, and he says that the work is his gift to she and Terry for their wedding.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and also, you know, speaking of the wedding story, you had the story of their wedding. The Teen Titans had a wedding, and you didn't have to have Deathstroke come in and try to finally fulfill that Hive contract, or, you know, thunder and lightning come booming in and destroy the mansion, or whatever. So the wedding is held at the palatial estates of whatever the hell his name was, that was the guy that Garfield Logan had been raised by, who was actually the Doom Patrol member Mento.
Oh, yes, yes.
The Fresh Maker.
Yes. No, that's
not the Fresh Maker.
Are you sure? I think he might have been the Fresh Maker.
Might have been.
This episode changes everything. The Freshmaker.
Now he's the Freshmaker. But, you know, it was so full of neat little character. It addressed the characters as individuals, as humans, or, you know, Tamarindians, as the case may be.
Yes.
But one of the neat things, the one point where Wolfman and Perez said, guess what? Garfield Logan's grown up, too.
Oh, yeah. You told me the story before. What happened? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think that the guy's butler, who, you know, was now charged with a lot of wedding arrangements and stuff, this clown shows up in his full clown outfit and makeup and everything, and, you know, the butler is just very disdainful about why did you bring a clown to a wedding? Why did you hire this guy? And Gar says, you know, a lot of the guests have kids.
Yeah.
And kids get bored at weddings.
You know what? You know he knows that.
Kid. Yeah, because he probably went to all the superhero weddings.
Exactly. All these kids end up having to go to all these weddings.
The worst was Negative Man and Negative Woman's wedding. That thing just went on, and it was like Greek Orthodox. It was 7 hours. And for those of you who wonder why we didn't address the a Negative Man and Negative Woman's Greek Orthodox, that's not true. This one changes everything.
This episode changes. It's full of spoilers that change everything.
Everything. So, and I thought, you know, that's such a neat little thing, because for the first time, they showed for all of his flippancy and all of his just happy-go-lucky goofing around and you know, like, you know, in one issue, they went camping. And, you know, he's always cracking jokes, like they're cooking hot dogs, and he says, you know, they're so round, so firm, so fully packed, not on our own Princess Coriander of Tamarind. But I think even Wally or one of them was getting in on it one time, because there was one time where they were, like, cooking there at the Titans Tower, and it may have been Garfield, but I think it may have been somebody else. It was where I got this wonderful line that Marv Wolfman or George Perez may have coined, or they may have stolen it from somebody else, was, that was no ladle, that was my knife. And I think Garfield, when they were eating, was saying, what foods these morsels be?
And you know what?
I've actually stolen all of these lines, except the hot dog one. That'll get you slapped.
And so we've kind of crossed the threshold into the first, from the first half of the show into the second. I would like to, if we can, because this is an area that I think you have more expertise on than I do, you know, because Wolfman and Perez, at least, they gave us, you know, Crisis, and they gave us all of these awesome things, and they really kind of defined the DC universe for a very long time. They also gave us the Team Titans.
Yes, indeed, the Team Titans. And I was racking my brain, because we were mentioning the Team Titans before, and I remember being very excited about the prospects,
right,
of the Team Titans. And I think, I'm trying to remember how they got, what their entree into the Teen Titans universe was, but it was a big deal. It was very heavily played up. DC went nuts for it. They did a huge campaign with in-store materials to, there was like a ceiling hanger thing that was like three-sided.
Yes.
And I used to own one years ago. And they had little, you know, rack talkers that you could put behind the comics. They would peak just above the top.
Okay.
And it was an interesting thing. I think they were supposed to be from the future.
They were from an alternate future, yes.
Alternate future.
Because why not?
Yeah. Which was a way to... one of the things that it did was bring back the popular and heartbreaking character of Tara, who turned out not to be the sweet little girl from apparently the royal family of Markovia.
What? What? This episode changes everything.
That's right. You know, it turned out to be a vicious psychopath.
That and, happened a lot in these books, by the way.
That's so true. Everybody eventually becomes a vicious psychopath. If they weren't already.
Right.
And, you know, even Deathstroke was a little wigged out by her.
Exactly.
And he hired her on to infiltrate the Titans. So then all of a sudden you get another Tara.
Yes.
From another universe. And, you know, and Garfield, who had the big eyes for,
right,
the original Tara. Because, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want a, like, a lithe, sexy little buck-tooth foreigner?
With an accent.
Exotic, yeah, she had that exotic European royalty thing going on. he grew up in a mansion.
She comes from a country where her older brother, I guess, is a ruler of a country, as well as having very similar powers to what she has.
And almost the same costume.
Right.
With his ridiculous Jim Aparo GF slathered across his chest.
Because when you run your own country,
yeah,
why not?
Well, I think he's the softer side of Dr. Doom.
I picked up that KTEL Records.
That was a great one.
It really was.
Baby, I Want to Kill You was my favorite.
Yeah. A Baby, I Want You to Throw in My Dungeon. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah,
that was a beautiful ballad there. But, yeah, you know, you've got this other Tara, which really messes with Garfield's head.
Right. Which then isn't hard to do when you're, like, 17 years old, yeah, by the way.
Then you've got the Bazooka Joe complexion Lost Boys vampire.
Right, you've got albino pyre over here.
Yeah, pink as gum. And then you've got...
but healthy. He looks healthy.
He looks healthy for a
vampire.
Vampire who's pink. Right. Which is apparently the precursor to sparkling. Ow.
Wow.
And then you've got, like, this electrical being, this energy being. You've got the requisite chick with wings, which we're going to be, oddly enough, exploring that sometime in the very near future. You have, which we have some surprises for
that,
you.
That episode that, really changes everything.
That one does change everything. And then we have, I'm trying to remember who all was in that group.
You had Mirage.
Mirage, yes. Who would later, I think you were saying, would later come back. I do seem to remember seeing her resurface.
She resurfaced in the awkward Justice League runs up to the New 52 and all of that, like before Final Crisis, where they had the Manitou and all of the...
Wow.
Yeah, just they were grasping at straws. Major Damage, or what was his name? The guy who could cause natural disasters was on that team.
Oh, yes.
Like, they were really... One of these days, we'll discuss those...
The awkward years.
And then
the Justice League had many of those.
Right.
More so than anyone else.
They were really fun. They found their footing, and then they tripped and fell and pretended that nobody saw it.
Yeah, I meant to do that.
I meant for that to happen. But yes, those were the key founding members of the Team Titans.
Yeah, it was a six-member team, and I remember being very excited because it was introducing six, or at least five, brand new characters at the time.
Yes. And they came back, and the whole idea was that they were trying to stop... it was one of these where they were going back in time or jumping universes to try to stop an event that would attack their world, which was the birth of Lord Chaos.
Yes.
And he's reared his ugly head a bunch of times in the DC universe since, but it turns out that Lord Chaos, get ready for a spoiler, was the son of Donna Troy and Terry Long.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So of course they're trying to convince him that he was this is how Donna Troy becomes not super powered Donna Troy again, because she had gotten powers and now she divests herself of her powers so that, you know, after they bump superheroic uglies and have a child, it will not have superpowers as well. But that was the whole point of the Team Titans initial foray.
That's right, and for those of you who are keeping count, there was a five-member team, not a six-member team.
Oh, yeah. Well, later they were Tara and another member were folded into the Titans proper. But the one thing I remember pretty extensively was the number of issue ones that they ran, Because didn't they run...
Yes, that's right. It was part of a Total Chaos storyline.
The Total Chaos. Didn't they run, like, nine issues?
I believe they had five number ones, or they did something where you basically had five different covers.
Mm-hmm.
Where it would show the entire team, but only, like, one of them would be showcased.
And didn't...
Off to one side. And I think the idea was that each of those five issues, yeah, that was like, was specific to one of those characters.
Exactly. It kind of told
gave you a little bit, yeah. They showcased each one. So you had Knight Rider, who was the your vampire. And Red Wing, Mirage, and I cannot remember the electric guy's name.
Oh, Kilowatt?
That might have been it. Might have been Kilowatt.
But,
not to be confused with Kilowog from Lantern.
Didn't they do kind of Rashomon it a little bit and kind of focus on that one character in that particular story with that one particular issue?
Yeah, I think it was more, you know, directly focused on...
Yeah, like from
I do remember, like, later issues of Team Titans, because they got their own book for a while.
Mm-hmm. Like 24 issues or something like that, 2 years worth, I think.
And I remember one issue of Terra going to Terra's grave. That being sort of like the young Vincent Van Gogh going and visiting the grave of his late... would have been older brother, Vincent Van Gogh. True story. Little wonder he grew up so screwed up.
Right, he was really stable.
Yeah, his parents literally would take him to the grave of their first child or an earlier child who died.
By the same name.
You know, and yeah, they just apparently had zero imagination.
The one thing for all the faults of the Teen Titans, because there were some, it was no Teen Titans. Yeah. It was... Keep in mind when it came out. It came out in the early 90s. It would have been very, very easy for them to fall into the early 90s trap, which we have discussed so many times on this show, which is the alternate covers, the bang for your buck, the cash grab. But they didn't. This story was focused on the players in the story. They were telling the story much in the same vein as they told the Teen Titans from the beginning. It just didn't have the same bang at the time. I just think that there wasn't the same, you know, the same confluence of events that allowed for the Titans to be what they were at the time which it happened.
Absolutely, and they had no anchors. I think one of the brilliant things... you know, mentioning like the new X, when the X-Men was relaunched, and also with Titans, the important thing you have to have there to be successful is a pre-existing anchor.
Right.
And when you have something that people can hang their hat on, then everything else becomes the more approachable. And the Team Titans lacked that, having any connection to anything, and Terra, a new Terra was not enough to give you that sense of connection, especially since it wasn't really Terra.
Exactly.
The same Terra.
The same Terra. So we're coming up against it, as we often find ourselves
doing. Yeah, so we need to do a quick run-through of the post-Perez Wolfman years, which we were starting to get into with Team Titans, because you're starting to change our artists.
Right. But you start getting into... different leaders of the Titans and different editorial mandates. You know, you've got your Teen Titans that ran from the 60s and the 70s, and then you got your new Titans under Wolfman and Perez. But then you've got like the Titans led by Arsenal.
Yes.
Where you've got Bart Allen, you know, Kid Flash. They rename him as Impulse later to be, you know, Bart Allen was the grandson from the future that came back as Impulse, the Kid Flash, right? Mirage is still around. This is the one where Mirage and Terra fold themselves in, the new Mirage and Terra. But you've got like Kyle Ranier is one of them. When Hal comes back and all that, they got to find a place for baby Lantern. And then they've got Supergirl and Rose Wilson. Let's not forget. The children of Deathstroke. Deathstroke deserves his own his own issue of this show. Yeah, Ravager, who
of course Jericho, his younger son would join the Teen Titans,
right?
Just at the tail end of the Judas contract when he was introduced.
Exactly. He was a body jumper, if I remember right.
That is correct. If he made eye contact, he could dematerialize and just sort of take over your body for a time. And he was mute because someone trying to attack Deathstroke had kidnapped him and cut his throat before Slade Wilson, for all his vaunted powers, was able to prevent that happening. And that led to his being estranged from his wife and his son, and all kinds of nastiness would ensue.
Right. Also, let's not forget Baby Wildebeest.
Baby Wildebeest, yes, the bewildered beast. And then there was a period where Cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch joined.
Well, he was in one issue, if I'm and I believe he was in the actually there's a character named go ahead, I'm sorry.
Was it like Danny something? It was like someone had invited Peter Billingsley or Peter Billingsley to join the like when they brought Peter Billingsley on Real People.
Right.
And it kind of just ruined the dynamic.
Phantasm, Danny Chase.
Yeah, Danny Chase, yeah, who would go on to become Phantasm, which is proof positive if you work hard enough, you die and come back as some sort of weird ethereal being.
Right.
You can improve as a character.
But there were so many iterations of the Titans.
Yes.
Speedy had Titans. Adam had... They de-aged the Adam.
Saw that, yeah.
And gave him Titans. The Titans Titans, and throughout it all, what you had happen was like Dick and Donna and Alan and all those guys keep returning to the Titans.
Yeah, Vic keeps coming back. Cyborg keeps coming back as sort of like a mentor or leader.
Right.
Because they need all the help they can get. And then you get into later incarnations, or more recent, I guess, where you have characters like Miss Martian. And
yeah, they invented that one.
Yeah, and you always have this sort of little throwback characters that reference the DCU.
Yeah, and it's a cool way. You know, some of it is shoehorned, let's be honest, but it was a cool way to invoke some new characters in there. You had guys like there was a period where they did Titans East, Titans West.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, where you had do you remember a hornblower? You had the horn.
What was his name? Mal Duncan.
Mal Duncan,
the hornblower. Yes. In fact, I found an old Teen Titans comic somewhere on the cheap. And apparently at one point, Mal was trying to open a discotheque.
That is awesome!
Back in the 70s.
That is great.
They were having some trouble with that for a while.
And then, whoever had the brilliant idea to give for Deathstroke to start his own Titans to fight the Titans. Where it had Arsenal post losing his arm and fighting an army of hobos to protect a dead cat. Favorite storyline ever, Cheshire and Osiris and the Tattooed Man
anyone who didn't have a job.
And then let's not forget that the Titans briefly appeared in Kingdom Come as well.
That's so true.
Where you had kind of the regular group of Titans, barring a few.
Well, there was a very subtle thing. One of the when they're meeting on Green Lantern's giant space station thing there.
Right.
There's a really subtle nod to the new Teen Titans.
Really?
Yes. There's one panel where different heroes are grouped off talking.
Okay.
And because you're not, it's not obvious who's who a lot of times.
Right.
Donna Troy is obvious. She's
got the thing with the suit.
She's put on a little weight there, and motherhood's agreed with her. And but it's obviously supposed to be Donna. And I think she and Red Wing, who is Dick Grayson, or Red Robin, rather, are, you know, kind of doing the little clutching hands, happy to see you thing. And there are some other characters hovering around them, and you begin to realize that Gold Guy is Victor Stone. That's Cyborg.
Yes, yes.
And then you see, oh, well, there's Red Arrow, and there's Aquaman. And there you suddenly start to realize that's the Teen Titans.
Which is really cool that they still are portraying them as being, because that's the one thing.
They would go and group together.
Exactly.
In a situation like that. It would be like a reunion.
But that's the one thing. Yeah, exactly. That's the one thing that they always did, even just in the DC Universe as a whole, is that they would, later, after the Titans would move on and grow up and go on to run their own teams or become Batman or become the Flash full-time, if they ever needed anything, the first people on the scene weren't the Justice League.
Yeah.
It was the other Titans would show up. You know, like if Batman or if Nightwing ever needed anything out in Bloodhaven, you could count on the Flash showing up, or, you know, Starfire or Donna Troy to show up on the scene, because they were Titans first. And that is super cool that they kept that going for 30 or 40 years. It's time that we have to talk about something, Cole.
Oh no.
Yeah, we have to. We have to talk about this before the end of the show, and you know we have to. And as much as it hurts the both of us to do, we have to talk about the Teen Titans animated series.
I knew it was coming.
It had to happen.
It's painful, but it is part of the process.
We have to work through it to get to the other side. So there was a Teen Titans series that really hurt the hearts of a lot of fans that grew up with the show. And because I personally, you know, I'm glad that it introduced a younger audience to the Titans. I really am. Anytime
Absolutely.
Anybody reads comics or gets into comics, I'm all for it in whatever fashion. But they weren't portrayed in the way that they had been for the past 30 or 40 years. They were presented in this, I don't know what you would call it.
I think what they were trying to do was recognize or address a different kind of audience that they felt they could retool the Titans, but make them approachable to, I don't know, an audience that was weaned on anime.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was also this sort of misbegotten concept that one of the things Warner does all too often is look around the world and see, well, this is selling, so this is what we need to do.
Right.
Without recognizing, no, what you need to do is do quality work.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do quality work, you're doing everything at its best. And when you try to be a Me Too, you're undermining what could have been.
Exactly.
And this was a case where they thought, well, you know, the kids like this anime thing. That's the way to go.
Yes.
And so they would tell these, you know, they added a lot of little things like, you know, where even the style of the animation would suddenly change from American anime to proper anime.
Is that a thing now?
That's it. American anime.
American anime?
American
anime. This episode changes everything.
It does indeed. American anime brought to you by Titans Cups.
But as in all things, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because you're introducing new people to the Titans. People are getting into comic books, which is, you know, we always want that.
Absolutely.
But you could have done it with new characters. You could have done it with non-established characters, because you tell a brilliant story that we've talked about, you know, multiple times on the show, where there was a little girl who watched the show,
Exactly. I was going to say, we're going to have to inevitably get to the law of unintended consequences.
Which, go right ahead. We're in the shallows. Take us into the deep end.
Exactly. Which this very much was, because growing up on the only Titans she ever knew, discovering the Titans that others knew,
right,
came off as a tremendous shock for a viewer.
Yes.
Who would then make that entree into comics and discover that, for example, a beloved character, Starfire, was a rapacious little slut.
Later to have been fixed, thank you, DC, at least to some extent. So,
but the thing about it was, what the cartoon does not do, will not do, cannot do, is to establish wholeheartedly that Princess Tamarind, or Princess Coriander of Tamarind, is not human.
Right.
And therefore is not beholden to the human condition, even though she lives here. So what comes across to humans, and what would be in humans, a rapacious little slut, is like, everybody does that.
Well, and you,
you
get...
know, it's like... Well, in the History of the World, Part 1, I just did it, and I'm ready to do it again. I'm like, do it, we all do it.
Well, then there's other issues that follow the same suit. You never get to deal with the fact that Cyborg has to deal with being as much, if not more, machine than man. You
yes.
never get to the fact that because of Beast Boy's unique subset of powers, he has to deal with base animal urges that no one else has to deal with and figure out how to deal with that, which they did in the Titans books. You have to deal with Robin coming out and figuring out how to live out from under, you know, what is viewed as being the if not most infamous, most famous superhero that there could possibly be. All of these things are left out of a show, and then you're forced into a world where they exist. And
yeah.
you're not forced in at the beginning, or at a good jumping-on point. You pick up an issue of Red Hood and the Outlaws, and this is what you get.
This truly does change everything.
Now, I will say this, and I don't know if you watched it, but I watched it religiously. They released a show called Total Justice, or Young Justice, I'm sorry. Later,
I have had that repeatedly recommended me, and I do need to add that to the things I get around to.
In which you get the Teen Titans show that they couldn't call Teen Titans at the point because they already blew their load on Teen Titans
yes.
Go, Papa Pataco, Happy Eyes, whatever. sorry if that was vaguely racist.
Only vaguely.
It makes me angry. But it was the Teen Titans show that we always wanted, never got. So
yeah.
you got a revolving cast, you got a core cast, you got background, you got stories, you got a lot of adult themes built into it. And it was excellent. I actually want to go back and watch it again at some point. But you got the show you wanted. And then they did it again with Teen Titans. Okay, well, this isn't good enough. We're gonna release another anime Teen Titans. It's even more ridiculous than the last one. Guys, what the hell is wrong with you? All right. We've got to wrap this up. We're over. So
I do want to point out one cover that really impressed me in one of the later incarnations of the Titans, maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, where it was all of your iconic characters, as if it was like Titans grown up. She had like Batman.
Oh, really?
I think it was supposed to be like future.
Okay.
And one of these things like where they're coming from the future to save the past or something.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, here's Batman packing heat. And I got the impression, I think the idea was supposed to be like, this is a one of the Robins having grown up to take on the mantle of Batman.
Right.
And you had all these other characters. I'm racking my brain to remember who all was on the character cover, but it was just such a striking cover that you got it immediately. And I also think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that the Teen Titans played a major role in one of the last successful cross-company crossovers, and that was X-Men Teen Titans by Walt Simonson.
Oh, yes. It was great, because, again, what you have is very similar themes playing out in two different worlds, in two different companies. So that was one that worked really well. There was a good synergy there. And it's been a long time since I've read it, and I need to go back and do it again.
Yeah, I'm the same. The only thing I really strongly remember was an exchange between Garfield Logan and between Beast, or Beast Boy, between between Changeling and Wolverine.
Yes.
Where he overhears Wolverine being called Logan and wonders if they're related. And is, given a big no.
It's like, no, bub. I'm Wolverine. I'm the best at what I do. And what I do is not kill kids, apparently.
And so. I think at one point, Garfield did turn into a Wolverine as well.
That's awesome. Because that's the thing, right? I mean, the X-Men at some point were the same age when Xavier brought him in. So they all remember those days. It's not so far off. But you get guys like Wolverine that haven't been a kid for...
Yeah, 110 years.
Exactly.
He has been a kid in living memory. And oddly enough, he's still alive. But yes, we do need to wrap here, because we could go on for days.
Oh, we really could.
Every incarnation of the Teen Titans. We could do whole shows on characters from, you know, Kid Flash and Cyborg to the really obscure ones like Panther.
Panther. I remember Panther. But yes, okay, so why don't you plug us up, Cole, and we'll...
All right, yes, of course, coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can find us on Facebook as Hey Kids Comics, as Jedi Cole Universe, any number of other places. You can look for our tweets occasionally on Twitter, The Jedi Cole U on Twitter, or at The Jedi Cole U on Twitter. We also now have The Jedi Cole Universe on YouTube,
where you can see
video selfies and some more great stuff coming up in the near future. And Hey Kids Comics has joined the Rancor Pit on DeepElemOnAir.com.
Indeed.
Yes, indeed. The second issue of Hey Kids Comics Live.
That's right.
We'll be airing live. We'll be streaming live from Dallas, Texas on Saturday morning, October 11th. One day. You can tune in and see live a day before I turn 49.
Oh, man. And you don't look a day over 48. No, no, I'm just kidding.
For now.
For now. No, you exude youth and exuberance, my friend. It's not, you've nothing to worry about.
I scarcely notice.
No one else does either. So you're absolutely fine there. Yes, absolutely. So join us next week when we discuss another fine topic in comics. We have a couple options we can go with for shows. So we're gonna leave it as a surprise, because this issue changes everything. All right, guys, remember to buy, collect, and enjoy comics. You know what?
Go change everything.
And change everything. And go find that Marv Wolfman. Let me find the I've got it pulled up on the old computer.
The link to the
right. It's actually MarvWolfman.com.
Oh, MarvWolfman.com.
Yeah, and read some of his stories and. It's really interesting to see his process. So go check that out as well. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you not only next week for a regularly scheduled podcast, but in one day from when this comes out, where you can see us live.
Come see us live tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. DeepElemOnAir.com. And hey, if you want to pick up the phone, give us a call.
That's right.
Show.
And change.
And change everything.
Good night, everybody.